This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, y'all? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week and review them. And we got a packed stack for you. We're going to jump into it in a second, but first I wanted to mention we are getting a bunch of great recommendations for folks on our iTunes comments section. We've been asking people to leave a comment there, request a book for us to review. Could be an older book, could be something that we reviewed a while ago in The Stack and haven't gotten back to for whatever reason. Whatever you want, drop a recommendation there. We don't have anything for this week's show, but coming up, we're going to be reviewing a manga called Dead Dead Demons DDD Destruction, which sounds like I'm making it up. Maybe I am. I haven't checked yet, but we're going to be reviewing that in 2 weeks' time. If you have a recommendation for us, again, drop it in the iTunes comment section. We'd love to check it out. But let's jump into it with Avengers Forever, number one from Marvel, written by Jason Aaron, art by Aaron Cooter. This is spinning directly off of the massive Avengers anniversary special that just dropped, following Ghost Rider and Deathlok as they travel through the multiverse, gathering together a team of multiversal Avengers to fight the multiversal masters of evil. Here we focus on a Ant-Man who is also Tony Stark. What'd you guys think about this one?
Yeah, who is this guy?
Yeah, I think
this is fun. I love this as an extension of what's going on in what we saw in sort of the recent Jason Aaron Avengers book.
Yeah, I think this is like, you know, we talked about framing and stuff like this and kind of starting with what we think is Ant-Man. Okay, great. And then the reveal that it's Tony Stark under there is pretty cool. Yeah, also love this whole kind of like hammer down, like, you know,
hammer down,
imbued with the power of vengeance is very cool setup. You know, I'm a sucker for Ghost Rider. This is really a lot of great action, a lot of the over top matchups here. I think this is really cool.
I think that I wouldn't want anyone to be writing this book but Jason Aaron. The way he takes on these like mash 'em up alternate universe ideas is so good, and so he's just having so much fun, just like his entire Avengers run. And so this is just a great, like, heightened version of that.
And shout out to Aaron Cooter, who is one of my absolute favorite artists working today, is a perfect match for this book. There's some gross and gnarly over-the-top stuff that happens throughout, but his character designs are fun. His action is clean. Just a really good matchup. Very excited to read the rest of this book. Next up, Batman One Dark Night, number one from DC Comics. This is written and art by Jock. This is a prestige format black label book. And the idea here is it 13 blocks? Is that the Bruce Willis thing where they need to battle through 13 blocks to get to their destination? It's basically that, but with Batman and a supervillain. Little bit of a spoiler there because most of the first issue is the setup of that, but you can kind of see where it's going from the very beginning.
Mos Def is amazing in that film.
What?
Mos Def.
Oh, yes. Most definitely, yes. This book is a lot of fun, and I think we're used to seeing Jock draw these very, very dark things for Scott Snyder in particular. Seeing him do something that is dark and is action heavy, but is just a fun action movie at the same time is very cool to see.
Yeah, plus you get like a really cool map of Gotham in there. Yeah, I think this is like a fun premise. And what's great is it's not this, and don't get me wrong, there's like a lot of great Snyder, Tom King stuff where we're like, what's happening? We're slowly following out. Like, we get it. It's all set up in this first issue. We understand the premise. And now we can just have fun and enjoy. So, yeah, I think this is a really cool book. I'm excited for more.
I really like the map stuff as well. I like the reference Alex is making. It's about Batman moving through space, moving through Gotham City. And we get to really see Gotham City. It's like a smushed New York where the Cloisters are Arkham Asylum and Blackgate is Coney Island, essentially, which if you've ever been on out there, it's what it feels like.
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly when I'm trying to get a hot dog at Nathan's. I'm like, geez, I'm in a high security prison over here. Come on.
Yeah, if you guys don't know, Alex enters the hot dung eating contest every year and comes in last place, right?
75th, yeah, 75th. Yeah.
You eat like two.
Yes. To the point, Joey Chestnut actually said to me this past year, he was like, you know, you're not actually in the contest, right? You're just eating hot dogs near us. And I was like, I'm coming for you, man. Miss Marvel, number one from Marvel, written by Samira Ahmed, art by Andreas Genolet. This is finally bringing Kamala Khan back to comic books. I mean, she was in a bunch of the other, but in her solo title. And here she's dealing, as everybody is these days, as is all the rage, she's dealing with some multiverse shenanigans that she gets mixed up in. But this, to me, felt like a really good, very perfect follow-up to the old series. It's right in tone with it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. What about you guys?
Yeah, you got to be careful. You don't want to stare at that bean too long in Chicago. You know what I mean? Like some crazy shit can happen. Yeah, I thought this, you know, really amazing art, great kind of premise set up, fun villain reveal at the end. Yeah, this is just a solid, great book, continues to be great. Yeah, please check it out.
Please check it out.
Please.
I love her wearing the it's the old Captain Marvel logo t-shirt that she's just wearing casually, and then she pulls it off to reveal her Ms. Marvel uniform underneath. I was like, oh, subtle shift into your superheroics mode.
It's the shirt before the shirt, man. Come on.
Yeah, no, I know what it's like. Yeah. I always wear it whenever I have a business
meeting.
It's like
when a Batman wears a human face over his Batcowl. It's the same sort of thing.
What?
Yeah.
When he walks into a place, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Nightwing does this all the time, too, where he's like, I'm just a regular guy. And then they're like, you're not a regular guy. You're Batman. And then he takes off his face and he has the full Batman costume under. And you're like, how did you push that down?
Yeah. Buddy? Bruce Wayne doesn't have a face. That's a mask. And then the regular face is the bat cowl.
Yeah. It's like tattooed. A Russian nesting egg of faces just all the way down. His Russian head is about nesting this big. It's the size of an egg.
He's got a tiny head. No one talks about Batman's tiny head. Oh, Pinhead. Pinhead.
Robin's number two, speaking of Batman stuff. Here we DC go. Comics written by Tim Seeley, art by Baldemar Rivas. In this book, the Robins are teaming up together to track down, though they don't know it yet, a evil Robin who is gunning for their original cases. This book is great.
Yes, it is really worth checking out. Fun, over the top.
Do you
want to
add a please there, Pete? You haven't said please yet for this one.
Please. Please.
Please.
I just think the reveal at the end is worth it alone. I just it's really cool. Tim Seeley, he's good.
I wouldn't call that a reveal at the end, but you liked where it ended.
Yeah, I would call it a reveal, but all right.
The way that we get, there's a lot happening in this book with the Robin sort of moving forward in their mission, in their case. At the same time, we're getting a lot of backstory on them throughout. It's great. The way that Tim Seeley balances all this together is really fun, and each Robin sort of gets their due over the course.
The Amazing Spider-Man.
I feel like Stephanie's getting a little bit of short shrift here.
A little bit.
And I think that's a shame, but I do feel like the way that that sort of case file section works, I think she's going to have a larger role later on.
I agree. The Amazing Spider-Man number 82 from Marvel, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Jorge Fornes. In this issue, Peter Parker is still in a hospital bed with radiation poisoning. Meanwhile, Ben Reilly is off being Spider-Man. But this is a very different issue here as Peter deals with a horror setup in the hospital. This was awesome. I thought this was great. This was my favorite Spider-Man issue in a very long time. Super scary, very weird, very different. Pete, you're giving a little bit of a stink face.
Yeah, no, this is
Does something smell where you are, Pete?
No, this is my worst nightmare. This book was a little too like in my own personal nightmares. No thank you with this.
Because you think it's going to happen to you.
Well, yes, yeah. When, you know, I recently went under for a procedure and I watched them wheel people away and you don't see them come back. And it's fucking scary, man. And this is my worst nightmare. Some creepy person, while you're knocked out or whatever, takes advantage of you. This is an absolute nightmare come to reality. Of course, Zalbin loves this because he's a twisted
individual.
Because
I'm going to do that to you someday.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I look forward to later. Just so you guys know, we are all each other's primary caretaker in our old age. So I can't wait to be putting Pete under and like just taking care of him, doing casual makeovers, light surgery. It's going to be great. I like this book a lot, too. I think the key here is Spider-Man so much lately has been wildly complex. For years, with the Nick Spencer run, I think we really liked that to start. Speaking of Alex and I, obviously. And then we were like, it's too complex. We don't know what's happening here. And a little bit this new run with the Ben Reilly stuff, this is just a fun, simple story that's terrifying, that happens to be terrifying, where Peter isn't really a superhero at all.
Or in control.
Yeah.
But Mary Jane steps up. Pete, yeah. You had to like that, right?
You're goddamn right she does.
Catwoman.
That's what you do for love.
Catwoman, yeah. Lonely City number 2.
Even if you're just not married and friends.
Okay. Right, Pete? Yeah. Catwoman, Lonely City number 2 from DC Comics by Cliff Chiang. This is another prestige black label format book. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot of Catwoman stuff, a lot of Batman stuff going on. But I'm loving all of it. Put it right in my veins. It's great stuff. Take a little bit of a side trip here, just because now we've talked through, I think, already 3 Batman-focused books, and there's more to come in this stack. Definitely reading through this, every time I was like, oh my god, this is so much. This is too much that they're putting on a weekly basis. And then I would read the book and be like, but it's really good.
It's really good.
And I mean, this was one of my favorites, maybe my favorite of all of the Bat-Cat books that came out this week. It's set in a sort of a near future where Catwoman has been away for 10 years, and we get to just really smart takes on what's going on in the Bat world in the near future. And because it's Cliff doing the writing, the art, everything, like there's great little Easter eggs and bits throughout in the background of the art. It's really clean, really smartly done. It's just a great, if I may say, package.
Nice. Art alone is worth it. Yeah, it's a cool take on just fast forwarding a little bit into the future, kind of like where would they be, what's going on. Also, there's like fun reveals of the characters popping up, and like it's cool choices made with characters that we know so well. So it's kind of refreshing to see these takes and to kind of see these people a little bit further along in life. This is great.
2 things that I'll mention just additionally. Justin, you mentioned a little Easter eggs and things. Worth it for the t-shirts alone. Just throughout the thing.
Exactly.
So funny. So much
great
fun.
Great fun t-shirts.
And I know I said this in the last issue. I cannot get enough of Old Man Killer Croc. Him being the dude who hangs out at the bodega all day.
Yeah.
Great. Love it.
And let me be honest, like, there feels like there might be a budding romance between Riddler and Catwoman here, and I'm here for it. This is fun.
Wow. Very good stuff. This book is really good. Let's move on to another one, though. King Conan, number 1 from Marvel, written again by Jason Aaron, art by Mahmoud Asrar. As you can figure out from the title, this is a older Conan who gets stuck on an island with his mortal enemy. They end up fighting, and there's a couple of twists there. Pete, you're a Conan guy. What did you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of like takes on Conan. This is a classically awesome Conan story. This is what I want. I want like Conan dropped into a fucking pit and having to fight his way out. This is really cool. You know, not overly trying to do too much. Just kind of a really cool Conan adventure. And Jason Aaron knows action, loves action. This is just bloody in all the right parts. Yeah, this is great.
Great thing to hear a person say. Bloody in all the right parts. Have you guys ever been to a maggot beach? Or washed up on a maggot beach?
A maggot beach. I thought you were saying a MAGA beach.
I also thought you were saying a MAGA beach. And I was like, yes to that, no to maggot.
Are we mixing? I'm not sure.
Because Conan washes up on a maggot beach, and that's why you got to check the surf report, because you don't want to be there for the maggot beach. Yeah. Very gross. I love, of all the Conan stories, I love King Conan. I like an older Conan. If you're a fan of Jason Aaron's older Thor stuff, and sort of the three parts of Thor that he was doing for a while, this is a great energy like that. And we get Conan doing this, having this great battle, while also reflecting on sort of his life and all the wins and losses he took over the years.
What do you, just to get into spoilers a little bit, what do you think about the fact that not only does he not do a lot of king stuff in this King Conan book, but also at the end he reveals he's not a king? Feels like false advertising to me. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, but you gotta hang in there, okay?
Oh, okay. Why, you want him to be like dividing up land rights? What are you hoping for?
Yeah, you're like, oh, I used to slay a lot of people. Now I need to, make sure the serfs are fed.
Let's work on the Jester's Act. I think it's a little weak in the middle. I love when he farts and I love when he juggles, but I want to connect the two.
I'd love to see it. All right, folks, we are going to move to this week's sponsor, which is the Players Tribune's new podcast, yes. Blindsided. Given how they play the game, you might not think that professional athletes are dealing with mental health issues, but that's exactly what the Players Tribune is tackling with their first ever mental health podcast, Blindsided. Hosted by former NHL goalie Corey Hirsch and psychiatrist Dr. Dyad McIntosh, the show will share the moments for a variety of athletes when everything changed for them and mental health became the most important focus of their lives. Blindsided allows listeners to have an understanding of the different types of mental health challenges people face, whether you're a professional athlete or not. Guests this season include Kevin Love, Paul Bissonnette, and Kurt Warner. So, Pete, great lineup there, right?
Yeah, it's a great lineup. And, yeah, it's important. Mental health now more than ever is super important, regardless of if you're an athlete or a comedian. You should be talking to somebody if you feel like you need to. And this podcast deals with that.
Anybody.
It's nice to hear other people's story and how people came to it and their journey. So I'm excited to check out this podcast.
Blindsided dives in deeper, it gets clinical, and it allows listeners to leave with an understanding of the different varieties of mental health challenges people face, why they appear, and why athletes in particular face them down. Blindsided is a sports podcast, not only for people who follow sports, but also for those who don't. All right, why don't we move it back to the reviews with Wonder Woman Evolution number 2 from DC Comics, written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Mike Hawthorne. Not to keep going into multiverse stuff, but here, once again, Wonder Woman is lost in a weird multiverse where some strange versions of her friends are attacking her, specifically Steve Trevor of Themyscira in this issue. What did you think about this, and how do you feel about this as opposed to the current Wonder Woman run?
There's a lot of good Wonder Woman stories going on right now. Between this one, the main book, the super high-end book that's getting into like redefining
Themyscira.
Historia. Redefining what Themyscira is and sort of what it means for the DC universe. And they're all good. Like, this is fun. This is... feels the art is a little more sort of almost sci-fi, and the story sort of is the writing reflects that a little bit, and I like that. I like having multiple creative versions of Wonder Woman when I feel like Wonder Woman as a character has been doing a little bit of the same thing for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. This is just great art, a fun story. I like the reveal. It feels like just a really cool Wonder Woman story. And definitely, if you're a fan of Wonder Woman, check it out.
Next up, Eat the Rich, number 5 from Boom Studios, written by Sarah Gailey, art by Pius Bach. This is the last issue of this book. And
bless you.
Excuse me.
Bless this book.
Bless this book, because
it's nothing to sneeze at, Alex. This book is nothing to sneeze at.
I've loved this run on this book. Very, very fun. Very gruesome at the same time. As you can probably figure out from the title, it has been actually not about eating the rich. It's about the rich eating their servants. Things turn around
classic.
A little bit this issue.
Fucking rich.
What'd you
people,
think
man.
About this series as a whole?
Well, yeah. I mean, what was nice is it was like, eat the rich. You're like, okay, what are we doing here? A little bit of twist on that. But I love the creativity from the kind of start to finish. I thought that it wasn't exactly what you thought it was going to be, even when you get a kind of a handle on it. So I was really impressed with the creativity of this book. The art is good. Storytelling is cool. I thought it was great.
I agree. I've loved this whole series. The art does great stuff with like using words as part of the visual storytelling throughout, which is awesome. We're really riding along with the emotional. It's almost like a classic romance comic, the way that we're sort of in the our main character's head for the whole time, which is really cool. Feels like that was a format that that Sarah Gailey was using as a basis, maybe even. I do think this last issue was felt a little fast. I wish we had a sixth issue where we could sort of see almost a longer epilogue, because I love where it goes, and then it feels like it really hammers into the end, and one more issue would have really brought it all home with a similar pace to what we got in the first four issues. But this is a great trade. If you haven't been reading this, pick up Eat the Rich when it comes out in trade.
Batman Catwoman, excuse me, number 9 from DC Comics, written by Tom King.
Batwoman Catman, let's see it.
I'm into it. Let's make it happen. Art by Liam Sharp. This is continuing the tale of Catwoman in three different periods of time as she interacts with the Joker and sometimes Batman. What'd you guys think about this issue?
Yeah, I think I love this kind of like three timelines thing that is set up here. Tom King is kind of telling a bigger story. I'm glad we're getting the space to kind of do it. I mean, the art is just very cool. I'm enjoying watching this whole thing kind of unfold. I'm nervous about what's going to go down, but I'm very much enjoying the ride.
The thing, I really, really like this book. I like all of Tom King's work, I feel like, has some merit to it. Mm-hmm. But if you remember back when this book was announced, it was like continuing the romance of Batman and Catwoman. Yeah. And I was like, this is, I just had a moment in the middle of this book reading this issue where I was like, what happened here?
We're going to get back to it.
We're so far away from that. And then
sometimes
it's so
you
got to
go away.
Definitely. And I'm not saying it's bad by any means, but it's just, we're in a whole nother place. And I miss that, the great like crime fighting romance, like
cat bat stuff.
Cat bat stuff of the series before it pivoted off into this. So I do miss that. And as far as the merits of this story, it's that problem where like I just don't know quite enough to know enough about what's going on an issue by issue basis to be like, yes, I know, I like this. There's so much Joker Catwoman stuff in different eras where I'm like, are they seem like they're friends, or they seem like they're enemies.
I feel like you're saying to me.
I'm not saying that. I feel like I'm always saying what you're saying to me.
I know better than Tom King. Go ahead.
Tom King is Alex Zelvin's nom de plume. what I was just saying, though, is it's just the thread gets a little lost. I feel like I need to reread the series every time a new issue comes out.
I'll agree with that. I will say, echoing my comment on the past couple of issues, Liam Sharp is so much better for this book right now than Clay Mann, who, mind you, I like Clay Mann quite a bit, but Liam Sharp is crushing it. There's several panels with the Joker in particular, with his smile almost leaking off of his face.
Love that.
So cool. Yeah. So I always say this is me being repetitive, but it's worth it for the art alone. Moving on, House of Slaughter, number 3 from Boom Studios, written by James IV and Tate Brabble, art by Chris Sheehan. In this issue, we're continuing to follow our two main characters who were in a relationship back in the day. Now, one of them is tasked with killing the other one while they're still fighting monsters. We see the beginnings of that relationship and the potential re-sparking of that relationship. I love how romantic this book is, which I was not expecting.
Honestly, talking about this right after Batman Catwoman, this is the exact kind of romance in two different time periods that I feel like we could be having in that book. Because it is, the romance is great. There's an element of danger here. We're seeing sort of, it's the telling the story of how the House of Slaughter works through the lens of these two characters falling in love and then trying to see if they can get it back after they've really gone sort of Romeo and Juliet into different parts of the House of Slaughter. It's great. It's operating on two levels, and it's only the third issue of this story. Very cool.
Yeah, I mean, the storytelling in this book, it has been so cool, the way we're kind of getting things in different ways. We're not getting a straight up, this is how it started, this is how the main character got involved. We're getting all this cool perspective stuff, and it's really interesting. Just these books have been so creative. The art is so well done. A lot of unbelievable action. There's moments where you jump, and it's the whole the sitting around a campfire telling crazy ghost stories, and then that shit happened. Oh, so scary.
Next up, one of my absolute favorite issues, not just of the week, but maybe of the year, Nightwing number 87 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Bruno Redondo. In this issue, Dick Grayson has made a pronouncement to all of Bloodhaven that he's going to rejuvenate the place, and there's a couple of criminals who don't particularly like that, so they go after him. But the artistic conceit of the book is that everything is in double-page spreads, and you follow almost... stop motion is the wrong word, but basically all of the panels are happening simultaneously.
Worth it for the panels alone.
As you follow Nightwing trying to escape from everybody, Batgirl gets involved at a certain point. This was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's not everybody's seen John Wick. Don't mess with dogs. You don't mess with somebody's dog. You know what I mean? Like, come on. Mm-hmm. Don't hurt or steal somebody else's animal. But this is just a, like, fantastic book. Just, Nightwing has been so good lately. It just continues to be great.
I mean, I'm a huge Nightwing fan. This run, I've talked about a lot. It feels like a renaissance, a huge, like, time to be reading Nightwing. And to your point, Alex, like, the art in this is fantastic. It reminds me of some Hawkeye stuff from the Landmark run that we talk about all the time that inspired the current TV series. And it also reminded me of the Dan Slott Spider-Man. Was it Marcos Martin who was doing the art? Similar stuff to this where it was, like, super wide, lot of action, sort of seeing the characters multiple times across the page to show the action feels like classic, like, you know, video game world building in a little bit. Like, it's super fun. It's super light. It captures the tone of the character in this great way. And maybe I'm on a romance hit, but seeing Nightwing and Batgirl out here doing it up, even though there wasn't too much romance here, it's just the shorthand they have with each other. This is the relationship I want in comics. Let's see more of this.
A Righteous Thirst for Vengeance, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Andre Limo Arujo. This issue, we get some big reveals about what's going on with our main character, who's end up on a hit for a poor woman. Things turn out in a different way than you might expect. Pete, you love this issue. Talk about it.
Yeah, we've been kind of getting little bits and pieces of the story. Now we're kind of getting, like, the main character's kind of, like, motivation, whose side of this that they're on. It was great to see our guy step up and kind of, like, decide not to continue down this horrible path. This was a very exciting issue. Love all the action. You know, you don't need thought balloons and word bubbles all the time. You can just show us. You don't have to fucking talk so much.
You need thoughts. You don't need to think. You don't need to think at all. Be as people. Just talk and read comics.
Don't overthink it, man.
Don't think at all. Don't ever think it. Overthink it. Ever think it. This book is stressful in a great way. It's like, I feel like Rick Remender, especially with the art by Andre Lima Araujo, it's so good. It's so tense, and it builds this. There's this mystery happening, or this sort of, like, identity switching that you it really makes it stressful to read.
Next up, Refrigerator Full of Heads, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Rio Ewers, art by Tom Fowler. In this issue, we find out some big revelations about our axe that chops off people's heads and keeps them alive. Turns out it's part of a set that has power to do a lot of other things.
And a belt that we don't even know what the power is. That's how weird it is.
What does the belt do? Very fun, though. Very much enjoying the series. It has a little bit of a different tone than Basket Full of Heads? But still very fun. What do you guys think?
The Basket Full of Heads, the series that was sort of before this, had sort of like a slightly goofy 70s horror movie tone to it, I feel like. This is like full good. This is like 80s horror movie where like it's fully like there's it's all over the place and there's just heads getting lopped off. Head lopping. That's a good idea for a book. There's so much of that happening in this book. So it's still fun, but it's a little more freewheeling than the original series.
Yeah, I think it's a great art. Cool story if you're into this type of shit.
All right. Well, that Texas
tell,
blood.
Hard to tell if you liked it.
I did like it, but, you know, horror stuff for me is not my cup.
Because you're scared.
Well, one of your biggest nightmares is that your head gets chopped off and you keep having to do this podcast, right, Pete?
Well, I got spoiler, Pete. When you get old and I'm taking care of you, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep your head in a jar and constantly podcasting.
That Texas Blood, number 13 from Image Comics, written by Chris Condon, art by Jacob Phillips. This is a one-off Christmas special that continues to double down on the last arc's pseudo-supernatural vibe, which I thought was kind of interesting. I dug this a lot. I know we've been really enjoying this book quite a bit, but Justin, I know you were particularly into this one.
I love this book. I love the world. I love the characters. I love just the storytelling. And this is literally like our main character telling a story about the past. It reminds me a bit of Starman, the sort of times past books back in that series that I love so much. And it's just a great sort of horror story for Christmas that we get here. And it treads the line well of having supernatural elements that may or may not be true because it is a story. So I love it.
Pete? This is creepy as shit, man. Go fuck yourself. This is some fucking weird shit.
There's no reason to curse that much right now, but all right. I'm sorry you were scared.
I don't know. I don't know why you think I need reasons to do that, but I don't.
All right, fair enough. Let's move on and talk about fucking Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, number 6 from DC Comics. Written by Tom King, art by Bilquis Evely. This is another banger of an issue from an incredible book so far. I have loved every single one here. Here, we get a retelling of Supergirl's origin that is darker and more upsetting than we've ever seen before, but absolutely excellently done, completely heartbreaking. Love this issue.
I mean, Justin, you want to talk about great packages. This is just unbelievable writing, unbelievable art.
Tom King.
This is just really, really great. Every single issue has just been absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I don't know what you're doing if you're not checking this out.
I agree. I love this book a lot. It takes sort of, it's hard to pinpoint what the actual sort of origins of the tone here is. It feels like sort of like a fairy tale, but retold in a very dark way.
Oh, I think it's adventure comics. Like it's adventure comics, like John Carter type stuff. One of the best movies of recent years, mind you.
But our Star Wars, famously quoted.
No, but it's like those old, I'm probably getting the time period wrong, but like very 40s, 50s, type adventure comics going to alien planets and visiting them. Lots of narration there. There's a little bit, I don't think this is exactly it, but it feels a little bit Little Nemo in Slumberland sometimes. Particularly through the character designs, though the sense of perspective isn't like that at all. But that's what I'm pinpointing. Sorry.
To jump on what you're saying a little bit, yes, those time periods and for sure, but the art is so much better than those time periods. Like it's just
because it's modern.
The way it kind of like sets up the character, the different feel and look. It sucks you into this world in such a fantastic way. It's truly impressive what this comic is doing.
What I'm saying is, it's this character that is normally like a bright, like youthful character that is just like, hey, what's happening? Naive, often portrayed Supergirl. And gives her this like much more like fraught, darker understory. And this story, if you remember, kicked off with her just trying to investigate the death of Crypto. And she's mad about it, trying to get revenge. And it's gotten into this just so hard questing for this thing and like almost dying in every issue. and here this like race against everything as her origins retold, like it is, it does have a sort of big adventure, almost like never-ending story energy to it as well. Like it's good.
It's her John Wick, you know what I mean? Like somebody messes with crypto and then totally. She loses.
All you talk about is John Wick, I guess. It's just, it feels a little, did you just watch that before we started?
Yeah.
The Harbinger, number 3 from Valiant Comics, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Robbie Rodriguez. This is entering the first arc, I believe, of this book, rebuilding Peter Stanchek, the Harbinger, as a new type of superhero for the Valiant universe. What'd you guys think about this one?
I really thought this was like, you know, because we get this kind of retelling, the new... I thought this was really great. I love the art. It really kind of sets up that this is a different feel from the Harbinger that we've normally seen. And I think that sets a tone that keeps things fresh and interesting. I was really impressed with this book. I was impressed with the layout, the panels, all the action. I thought this was really cool. Also really love the backup. I'm very excited for that Colin Bunn series. For Shadow Man, but yeah, this is great.
It's got a lot of big ideas in this book. There's some like when your identity is exposed, like do you move on? Do you try to retake it? And then like trying to like just great superhero and use of the sort of psychic powers, sitting there hovering over the world, changing the density of the air, and trying to figure out how to attack these villains. It's cool. It's really, a really smartly written book, I think.
Next up, Catwoman, number 38 from DC Comics, written by Ram V, art by Casper Wingard. This is serving as sort of a coda to the big Fear State storyline that happened with Catwoman and everything that's been going on in the past couple of issues, as well as setting her up for a new status quo where I believe she's going back to Gotham City after spending a while
away. Going back to Gotham.
So. Yep. So the big standout for me here is Casper Wingard, who I believe does the art for Homesick Pilots, which we love.
Yep.
So very excited to see him on something else, particularly Catwoman. And Ram V, always very reliable as a writer.
Hell yeah. I think this is really fun. I like the reveal. A lot of cool character moments. A lot of just cool character designs. Like the creepy priest character. This is great.
It felt like the last issue of a run, really. So I was sort of surprised at the way the story was told. Like you said, lots of cool stuff. Use of Clayface in here is really cool.
Yes. I wasn't going to spoil that, but fuck you, man. Jesus.
I didn't say how. That's not a reveal. Now you ruined it by saying that. No. But I don't know. I feel like I'm ready. I think we can all move on from Fear State now. I'm comfortable moving on.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're comfortable
moving
on.
I'm so scared to move.
I'm really comfortable.
That's great. I hope you're comfortable talking about Radiant Black, number 11 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins and Joe Clark, art by Marcelo Costa. This is bringing our now main character back into the fold. And spoiler, though this gets introduced early on, he was in fact able to bring our previous main character back to life, but that causes more complications for both of them in a big way. I love how they just keep layering on the mythology of this book. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, the twists and turns, and just when you think like, okay, all right, this is how it's going to go. Yeah, I mean, really cool last couple of pages. I think it's just one of those things where they're being very smart about this. It's like, we know what superhero comics are. We're making different choices. We're doing different things as far as like who gets the spotlight and who wears the mantle. It's very cool to see the different choices and struggles that people are going through. I think this is a really smart comic.
I feel like we've talked about this a lot through the run of this book. This book is way better than it has any right to be. Like, we did not see it coming that it was going to be this good. And this, like you're saying, like layered superhero storytelling And still, like, it's funny at points, the yeah. relationship between our sort of now main character and, is it the red, radiant black, radiant red? Is that
pink,
what, or
yeah.
pink?
Pink? It's the pink one, yeah.
Yeah, is really fun. Their conversation is really funny about sort of internet speak versus non-internet speak, was great. And the drama is, like, I'm caught up in it. The reveal yeah. at the end was good.
It's good stuff. All right, folks, if you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast on YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.